Shoulders in a smooth, practiced arc and sets him down on the infamous grassy knoll. He catches my eye as he stands up and gives me a shy grin, looking a bit like a shorter-haired version of the young Elvis Presley. A shiver runs down my spine. I'm not sure why. And then I realize these people are the Newmans, the family from the images and videos I've been studying online, who will soon have a front-row seat to the assassination. They'll be swarmed by the media after the shooting, dozens of reporters snapping photos as the parents lie on the grass, their bodies shielding the kids from the chaos. I've apparently stared for a moment too long, because Newman and his wife exchange a confused look. I give them a nervous half-smile and then push past, hurrying toward the concrete steps that lead up to the pergola. A picket fence and some large trees camouflage the much less picturesque view of a packed dirt parking lot behind the plaza. Most of the trees are still green, even in late November, but a few are beginning to shed their reddish-gold leaves. Three or four people are walking around near the fence. I keep reminding myself to just look for the powder blue Ford Fairlane. Still, I can't help but notice a young guy with a thin mustache looking out over the grass embankment and staring intently toward the street, his left leg twitching slightly. He's leaning against the fence and smoking a cigarette. It's too warm for the jacket he's wearing. Could that bulge in his pocket be a pistol? And that shaded space between the tree and the fence could definitely hide a rifle. I shake my head, pulling my attention back to the more important issue, and finally locate the car that I glimpsed briefly from the sidewalk on my last jump, just before shots filled the air and ended any chance I had of getting close to the plaza. The Fairlane is parked about 25 yards away, behind a dirty red truck with a flat front tire. There are many powder blue 1959 Ford Fairlanes on the road in 1963, so this might be another dead end. I shift my path to the right, hoping to slip around the truck and a few other cars so that I can approach them unnoticed from the back of the lot. Assuming my grandparents are even in the car and not hanging out over near Zapruder, photobombing his home movie, or up on the sixth floor of the depository watching for Lee Harvey Oswald. We're putting a great deal of faith in Catherine's memory of a brief conversation with Evelyn nearly 50 years ago. Connor oohed and aahed over the images of this classic car when we were researching the vehicle online, but I'm sorry, cars from this era are major eyesores. The tail fins alone have enough metal to make a Prius or two. Aesthetics aside, however, I'm currently kind of fond of the fins, because they provide a bit of extra coverage as I move around the car in full crouch mode. There are two people in the car, but they're so entwined that I can hardly tell where one begins and the other ends, let alone be sure if they resemble the picture my dad gave me. If it is them, I know that this steamy embrace is mostly a cover. They're hoping the guy at the fence, or any other potential second shooter, will ignore a young couple making out in the parking lot, and they'll have front row seats for history as it happens. They probably aren't even breathing heavy. But there's still something distasteful about sneaking up to introduce yourself to someone who may be your 25-year-old grandmother when her shirt is half undone and your grandfather has just made it to second base. I pull out my Kronos medallion. The picture and my phone are in my other hand. While I'd never be able to pick up a signal in 1963, the phone will still play the videos that Catherine and Dad recorded to support my story. I debate for a moment whether to tap politely on the window. Her hair is the same dark copper as the woman in the Polaroid, however, so I decide to just go for it. With a quick tug on the chrome handle, the door of the Fairlane swings open. I'm in the back seat, holding up my Kronos key like a police badge before they realize what's happening. Evelyn casts a furious glare at me in the rearview mirror and immediately starts buttoning up her sweater. Timothy looks back, and I have the odd sensation of seeing my father's angry face, 15 years younger and maybe 10 pounds heavier. Dad's really mellow, so I've only seen that face a few times. The occasion I remember most clearly was when I was maybe 5 years old and tried to see if the laser in a DVD player will heat up a Pop-Tart. It won't.